Good evening, everyone, to our weekend wrap show on this Sunday, the 30th of April, and what a good night it was. Joining me tonight for a chat about the Crows and the week's round of the AFL is the usual suspects here, Macca and Nikki. How are you going, guys?
Yeah, good thing.
As I said to you just before, that was acceptable.
Very acceptable. Yeah, it wasn't bad at all. Kind of makes you shake your head a little bit, to be honest. Oh, dear.
I actually didn't realise until I looked it up afterwards that they only kicked 4-1 after quarter time.
Yep, 16-14 to 4-1 after quarter time.
Yeah, and given that we started chipping around with about 10 minutes to go, as Jason McKay says on the chat, how good was that? Yeah, it was pretty damn good. But let's keep the lid on because it's only round six.
It is only round six.
Only round six. Before we get into that chat, let us look at the weekend's results. And on Friday night, we had a pretty good match between the Giants and the Bulldogs. The Giants getting up 75 to 73. Did you guys see that game?
Yes, I did.
And it was a very, very excellent game to watch. And that was two heavyweight fighting it out. And I think watching that game, we watched our two challenges for the flag.
But unless Toby Green can pull his head in, he should not be spoken about in the same breath in relation to Eddie Betts.
No. Well, I mean, to be fair, I reckon Cameron gave him a big chat at three-quarter time and said, you owe us something for that. And he certainly gave him something in the last quarter. He was pretty good.
He's a good player, but not in the same caliber as Eddie.
Oh, God, no. He hasn't been around long enough. No. Saturday. Oh, I predicted this one. St Kilda beating Hawthorn.
My tips are shit house.
By 75 points down in Tassie. Oh, my God. 130 to 55. I didn't watch the game, but with that result. Tell us about it, Macca.
Well, you watch the demise of the Hawks. That's the end of the Hawks. You can forget about them playing finals this year, and if Clarkson has got any brains, he'll say, I have to do something very different. A, in my game plan, and B, with my personnel, because they looked so slow, so pedestrian, and they actually looked so out of date with the way they were playing by comparison to St Kilda.
Well, Macca, did he put Gunston back on the wing?
A big pun?
Did he play Gunston off the wing again and not up forward?
Played him mainly in the forward lines, but he was roaming all around everywhere again.
Yeah. I think the issue with Hawthorn is what a lot of teams suffer, and we suffered it during the Neil Craig era, I reckon, where the personnel evolves over time, but the game plan doesn't change, and the personnel coming in just don't have the ability to pull it off. And Clarkson appears to be playing or wanting to play a similar game plan, and he just doesn't have the cattle at the moment, I don't think.
Definitely, you did right about that. They don't have the personnel to play the game plan that they won premierships with.
Now, PJ Crowe's on the chat. Just come on, mate. Just settle down a little bit. It's only round six. I know it was very complete, but it's only round six.
let's get excited. I think there's a lot to be excited about.
Now, the next one.
Be realistic.
The next one that I didn't pick, Carlton beating Sydney, bloody hell.
I am so pissed off at Sydney. They were my gauntlet pick for this week. Because I thought, that's the ones that they're going to win against Carlton down there. Well,
I watched that game too. I mean, I'll tell you what, where did they get that game from? I mean, they played a terrific game, Carlton. And in fairness, it wasn't so much that Sydney played bad. Carlton played very, very well.
Well, tell me, Macca, what was the difference between the Carlton that just beat Sydney and the Carlton that looked like a Div 3 amateur team against Port Adelaide?
Absolutely. In fact, it was aggressive and it went hard for the ball and it used the ball well. And everything that was missing in the Port game was there in this game. And I just can't, if you didn't know better, you'd ask for a urine swab of the whole 22.
Well, was it because they actually lost and how they lost last week that, as a collective, they actually pulled their finger out?
They did. Undoubtedly, they did. They played good footy.
Well, to me, against Port, it seemed like their senior players weren't really putting in, and you can't really blame them. But I'd imagine that to get a win over Sydney, particularly with that midfield. Their senior players, Murphy and Gibbs and the like, must have lifted their effort a little bit.
They all did. No, it was a team effort.
I have to say, watching that game, it felt like Sydney thought they were up against a Neathville team and were just taking it too easy. There was no intensity from Sydney at all. And poor.
When you're Zip 5, Nick, I don't reckon you can afford to take any game easy.
No, and that's what got me about just watching them, how slow and lackadaisical they actually looked. They thought, I'll just get here and that'll work. And, of course, it didn't work because they didn't follow on.
But, Nicky, it's a lack of confidence. That's what it really is. And the only one that actually showed real zip for them was Zach Jones. He tried very hard to get speed going, but they were, as you said, pedestrian, and that their brain seemed to be thinking too slowly, or they were overthinking it or whatever. But they're certainly not playing as Sydney did last year.
Now, we had the Power getting up over Brisbane pretty comfortably in the end after a rip-roaring first quarter. They basically blew the game right open in the first quarter, 150-67. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that I reckon Port are a serious contender this year.
Well, I'm with you. Actually, you're not out on a limb. I'm with you. I think they, along with the two that I mentioned earlier, this is the only other side I think that could win the flag. And I think it would still be a little bit of an upset for them to beat the whole three of us. But they are the only other contender.
Thoughts, Nikki?
Didn't really watch that game. That one, it was a really boring Saturday night because you had that one and then you had the fizzler that was the derby.
Yeah.
They were just kind of going through the motions. By the sounds of it, Brisbane did try. They had some nice movement, which is what we've seen from them. All season so far, I think they're building nicely. I think Fagan's actually doing a good job with them.
Yeah, they just need a few more pieces of the puzzle, I think, up there.
Yeah, but what happened is Port thrashed them in the midfield, which is Brisbane's strength.
I reckon Port are going all right, and you've still got to be playing well to win by, you know, whatever that is, 83 points or whatever.
Yeah.
Their percentage is solid, so they're not going to be under threat for a while with teams at their win-loss record, and I reckon they could sneak into the top four, and by golly, wouldn't it be just fantastic to meet Port again in the finals? I reckon it would be fantastic.
Only if we win.
Well, of course, but I don't put them on our level just yet. West Coast won the... That is
actually still one of my favourite pieces of commentary of all time. Tim Lane, some showdown after halftime. Port haven't bothered to show up.
The Western Derby, 103-63, West Coast doing that quite comfortably. They had to give a response after their insipid effort in Melbourne the week before, and they did what they had to do, 41 points. I didn't watch it.
That was horrible, considering you had Sandy with his, 250 games? You know, for him to have played that many games, you know, the size he is and everything else, and then not to give a whimper.
Yeah.
That's not good. But the West Coast, as we know, they are flat track bullies, and they look like stars when they're playing over there on that funny long ground, but not too good over here.
Just want to say g'day to Mark on chat. He's from Canada, 7 a.m. in Canada. Thanks for tuning in, mate. We also had North Melbourne getting up in a pretty good quality game over the Gold Coast, 107-94. I thought Gold Coast might actually win this, and it was probably just Eddie Had that did them in. They're just still lacking a little bit down back, I think, Gold Coast, but they're not that far away from it.
I didn't see that particular game, but...
I watched that one.
I just saw some of the highlights, and Gary Ablett looks like he's starting to get back to his best.
Oh, well, yeah, over 40 touches and, a fair amount of score involvements and just about carried him on his back, and... someone made a really good comment. You know, he started the year pretty pedestrian, but he is a proud footballer. And I think when he got called out and when the spotlight got shone on him a bit, he's really stepped up his efforts. And also, Ede's playing him where he should be playing, and that's in the midfield.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We had Melbourne doing what they needed to do and winning against Essendon, 1-1-2-74. So that's a game that Melbourne in the past might have struggled with, but they did what they had to do. And then the next big upset of the round, Collingwood. How the hell does this happen? Collingwood 107 versus Geelong 78. The Pies getting up by, 29 points. What the hell?
Apparently they tagged Selwood.
Yes, they did. Tagged him out again. And I heard that Selwood was so upset at the thought of being tagged by Levi Greenwood that at one point, I think it was first or second quarter, he actually addressed the umpires and the AFL steward or whatever at quarter time, which I think he should be fined for. I don't think that's on.
He doesn't. He's not allowed to under the laws of the game.
Yeah, he is. He's captain.
Captains are allowed to do it. He can talk to the umpires, but I don't know about the steward.
It's not a good look. And Joel needs to be better than that. Levi Greenwood did a fantastic job and was actually leading him in possessions at one stage during the second quarter. And, you know, it's all very well and good for Selwood to be a front runner. And, you know, when everything's going well, you know, he's happy. But he gets a fair run from the umpires and he needs to be able to cop it when it doesn't quite go his way.
Well, the interesting thing about
that... He even gets a free when he gets tackled by his own teammate.
Yeah, that's right.
The interesting thing about it is, though, that the guys that really think about football as commentators have been discarding Geelong as a genuine premiership chance because they believe that they rely on two players too much, and that's exactly what happened today. Collingwood cut out those two players in Danger and Selwood, and the rest of the team couldn't do it.
Yep. And I didn't watch the game. Did you watch the game, Macca?
No, actually, I had to look after the missus at that stage. I didn't get to see that.
It's on right now. I've got it on silent. It's on my screen right now. They're doing the replay. It's in the second quarter. And Darcy Moore's just taking a nice mark.
Yeah, which is unusual for him. I think Danger might be playing with a bit of an injury for them at the moment. He doesn't
get
his explosive self and his disposal count, as Vardy points out in the chat.
He can't run.
Down. Yep.
He got hit in the ribs 2 weeks ago. Last week you could just see he had no he could not actually take off.
Yeah,
and because he doesn't have that explosive pace, he doesn't know what to do.
Mm. He can't play any differently. So ribs is the one injury that you don't want to take into a contested ball game style. I want to know whether they tried to move Selwood forward, which is what they probably should have done, but I don't think Chris Scott's got the kahunas to do that.
Well, he doesn't have to worry too much. He's had his contract extended for another 2 years, but I don't know whether that would... That sounds good, but the trouble is if the ball's not getting there, it won't work.
No, but he just needed to maybe break the tag a bit, though, and maybe put someone else in the middle, Macca, rather than just getting Selwood blanketed. Anyway, let's move on to the ladder, and the Mighty Crows are on top and now a game clear. 6 wins from 6 outings, guys. Our best ever start to a season.
It is.
Sitting on 160.8%. On second, we have equal GWS Geelong and Richmond, 5-1. At 4-2, we have Port, West Coast and the Bulldogs. We have Melbourne in the 8-on percentage, sitting on 12 points with St Kilda, Essendon and Fremantle. On 8 points, we have Collingwood, Gold Coast and Carlton. And then down to the stragglers, North, Brisbane, Hawthorn and Sydney, still winless. Pretty interesting table. I don't see anyone apart from St Kilda really pressing for a top 8 spot at this early stage.
I think you're right, actually, because I don't think there's any other team that is staking a claim and saying we'll be good enough to play finals.
Yep. And that's interesting. I mean, Essendon are playing good in patches, but I think they'll run out of steam. Fremantle, I don't think, are quite good enough despite some good wins. I think the only other team that has the talent to do it is possibly Gold Coast, but they need their best 22 on the park and they're just not getting that at the moment.
And a bit of consistency as well.
Yep. And a decent coach.
Their depth is a little worrying, but, I mean, fair enough. They've lost two absolute keys down back and that's hard to cover.
Yeah, but given their disastrous season last season... they look to be heading in the right direction, in my view. I think they're not going too badly.
I'd agree with that. Yeah, much, much improved on last year.
Anyway, on to the game that we're all here to talk about, and it was the Crows. Not surprisingly. Getting after a slow start, or slowish start, we still kicked 5 goals in the first, but we ended up walking all over Richmond. 21 goals, 14, 140, to 10 goals, 4, 64, a margin of quite a bit. What's that, 30, 76 points
to
the
Mighty
Crows. Initial thoughts, guys?
Well, it was like the World Heavyweight Championship was being billed as, and it's very much like that. They threw everything they had at us in the first quarter. I mean, they were very, very good in that first quarter. But that was it. That's all they had to give. And we absorbed whatever they could give us, and we regrouped, and our coaches just made a couple of little refinements to the way we played, the way we structured, the way we set up. And then after that, we just knocked the shitter out of them every round. So, and I think it was 16-14 to 4-1 after quarter time. And that was a very fair reflection, perhaps even a kind reflection of how the game went after that.
Yep.
It was mostly the change, was mostly coach's box and the players, because they've got players that will respond to a change in the game plan. Richmond had a very set game plan to beat us, to try and stop our run off of half back, because that's where we've been getting a lot of our goals from, is that we'll turn them over there. The downside was it meant they had either only 4 forwards or 5 forwards.
Yep,
for the whole game.
Was pretty high.
Yep.
And what I felt in the first quarter with our slight, we weren't playing at maximum intensity around the contest, I felt. And it meant that across the wing and half forward line, there was a lot of congestion, and we weren't dealing with that. And therefore, they were getting a few repeat inside 50s and hurting us on the scoreboard a bit. And then, you know, once we addressed that and got our intensity up, we were able to spread more effectively and use the width of the ground, which is... And once we do that, we're just unstoppable. Once we get some width with our transition, you're just not going to be able to stop us. And that proved to be the case yet again. Let's have a look at some stats. There's some amazing stats here. We had 127 more disposals. We had 73 more kicks. And how's my maths on the run? 54 more handballs than Richmond, for a total of 461 to 334. And at no stage, apart from a little bit of showboating, maybe at one stage late in the third, it didn't look like we were overusing the ball.
No. In general, I thought our usage of the ball was pretty good. Naturally, there will always be some incorrect use because they're human beings, and therefore they make a wrong judgment, or they didn't see somebody coming, etc. But in general, it was. And I was listening to one of the players talking after the game. He made the point about the fact that they have been basically their games revolve around not go handballing backwards, but if possible, handball forward, and they overdid it just a little bit at times.
Yep. Well, we had 346 effective disposals, so 75.1 disposal efficiency. So you couldn't really say we were overusing the ball. We used it by foot, and particularly after quarter time, I felt we used it by foot. I felt that the game was very much about field position again, and it's one of Pikey's favourite little sayings. And I felt like Richmond took advantage of field position in the first quarter, and as I mentioned, we couldn't really clear the congestion, and we found it hard to... pardon me, get our transition game going. And the other thing that they did very well was they forced us to go up and down the lines in that first quarter. So often we were kicking to congestion, and whether that was their intensity dropping off or us changing our structure slightly, it seemed that after quarter time we were able to get, as I said before, get that lateral movement going and getting a bit of width. And once we got into space, we didn't seem to have that trouble after quarter time.
Just in that first quarter, Nicky made a point off air when we were just chatting about it, about the fact that there was a bit of a breeze circulating around. And I mentioned that in the first quarter, our defence dropped several mucks I thought they would have taken it. And that actually led to the ball being remaining in their forward lines and in a couple of cases even into scores. And I thought that after that, and obviously after getting used to the conditions and that, our back lines just swallowed everything that came their way.
Yeah, I just felt it was numbers at the ball. I felt they were a little bit hungrier early, Macca. And I didn't hear Pikey's presser, but I believe that he made some reference to the players addressing their intensity or something like that. Their intent, maybe. Some of the other stats. Here's another ridiculous stat. How can this happen in a game of football? 125 marks to 58. I've never seen a disparity like that.
Well, usage of the ball, basically, it comes back to
120. That's a 67 mark difference in a game where we weren't chipping.
Quite simply because they had an 8-man back line, which was either leaving, and once we figured out what was going on and sorted things out after quarter time, is you either had Lever as the loose man or you had Kelly as the loose man. They're both actually really good marks, and they read the play so well. So there's a whole lot of marks. And then because of the way they were pressing and where they were trying to stop us having access, we were chipping it around and then getting the break. And I thought it was really interesting how much we used Matt Crouch as the link-up play through that midfield. That's way more than I've actually seen him do before. And he was really effective at it.
Didn't notice a lot of chipping, though. Noticed a lot of aggressive
really good pinpoint.
Aggressive forward handball in that second and third quarter to cut through their midfield zone. It was some of those handball chains were very adventurous and very impressive. And, you know, just to continue on the marks thing, they played a very small forward line, only reviled up forward, and it was silly. I mean, they only took 9 marks inside 50, and I don't care how good your small forwards are. If you're not taking marks inside 50, you're not going to kick a winning score. We took 21 marks inside 50, and I think they erred a bit at selection going quite as small as they did, probably underestimating the versatility of blokes like Hartigan and Lever, who can play both tall and small. I thought Hartigan was quite good again, even though he didn't have much to do in the second half. I felt he did well early when it mattered.
Yeah, I think
Flavos makes a very interesting point about that, Phoenix, is that Hawks tried it against us, Ports tried it, Essendon's tried it, Gold Coast tried it, and now Richmond bringing in smalls.
Yeah.
That's not worked.
That's because our defenders are very mobile. Hartigan is very, very agile. I mean, he stood Robbie Gray, and Robbie Gray is one of the most agile forwards that anybody would want to stand. Taylor's not as agile as that, but he's still not absolutely hopeless. And our half-back line, well, that's, you know, the two flankers, they are very, very agile.
Yep. What else have we got here? Hit-outs, and we'll talk a bit about individuals more in a moment, but hit-out 63 to 41. Great effort by Source, who rucked for the majority against Nankervis, who's supposedly the number one ruckman at the moment. Freeze, we seemed to get the rub of the green, 21-15, but I felt the umpiring was pretty average ways, actually. I didn't think it was a very good, well-umpired game.
They weren't consistent.
No.
They would pay something for one side, and same thing happened the other side. Nah.
Yeah. The game we've got... Sorry, go on.
I was going to say that, and Nicky Bate raised a correct point about their inconsistency because, and it did go both ways. I'm not saying just that, well, only just for us. But even within the space of 30 seconds, they'd give an inconsistent decision.
Yeah. There's some, like, you know, there was a lot of throws. There's still a lot of throws missed, and I reckon it really detracts from the spectacle of the game when they don't pay throws. You know, the adjudication of Dustin Martin at times is a bit bewildering. But anyway, I think it was bad both ways.
He was treated very generously, I thought.
I felt so as well, to be honest with you. I felt... I felt he stood in the tackle a couple of times. He fended off quite high a couple of times. I felt I think Dusty only had 24 or 25 posies for the game, and I felt he was pretty well held. inside 50, 60 to 50. So it's not as if Richmond didn't go inside 50 all that often. So that highlights, if you're going to only take 9 marks out of 50 inside 50s, you want to have a couple of Eddie Betts running around. Again, our efficiency in terms of scoring conversions was pretty good. We had 13.17 disposals per scoring shot. Again, that's way under the league average, if my memory serves. Just under 22 disposals per goal. I think the league average is about 25, 26.
I kind of felt that it was such a weird feeling being there, in that we had dominated so much of the play and we would keep it down there, that I didn't think we were quite getting enough reward for effort in terms of our scoring.
Yeah, there were patches when we didn't appear to be. There was a patch through the third quarter, if I remember rightly, where I felt like we weren't getting reward for effort. But I think, you know, overall, I felt we were very good going into forward 50, you know, spotting up short targets as well as getting a couple over the back. And with JJ looking very, very rusty on his return, that's only going to improve, I think. 25 contested marks, 14, 21, I've already done that one. We ended up winning the clearances after being behind early. We ended up winning the contested ball after being behind early. We also 38 to 34 rebound 50s. So really, after quarter time, the tale of the tape was that we worked harder, we got more of the ball, and we used it better.
Yeah, just you mentioned JJ, I want to mention it before we finish. Before I forget it, that patch where he had 2 handballs and a kick. And they were the 3 most weakest, ineffective disposals you could ever get out of one guy in the space of about 20 seconds. I've never seen anything as bad as that.
And well, to be fair, he was putting up, there was at one stage, there was also a mark. He was in the wrong spot and he got yelled at and he put his hand up and he's like, yeah, my bad. Yeah, and then he went back and he did a contested mark as well.
He did. He looked completely out of sorts though. And those little dinky things are things that he can pull off when he's up and running, but I think his something outshone his
just
ability.
Just getting up to speed with the game.
His ambition was greater than his ability. There's no doubt about that.
That's right. All right, let's run through some stats. And the leading disposal winner on the ground was Matty Crouch, 15 kicks, 23 handballs for 38 posies.
Loved his game. I mean, it's a great answer to the people that knocked us about trading Vince.
Hang on, I haven't finished his bloody stats yet.
I just want to praise the guy.
Shut up. 15 contested possessions, 2 inside 50s, 3 tackles, 1 goal, and 8 clearances. Our main man in close, and away you go, Macca.
Yeah, he actually makes it look easy. And being a left footer helps because they grab him. Even when they grab him, he just swings onto the left foot even while he's being held and disposes of it. And he's really good in the clinches.
I loved the goal he kicked, in that he knew he was surrounded by Richmond players. So he didn't pick the ball up because they couldn't tackle him then. So he just paddled it just to create that little bit of space. Now, I reckon he was actually aiming to pass it at Eddie into the goal square.
No.
Or do you reckon he was having a ping?
Yeah, no, he's having a ping. You see it from behind the goals on the replay, and you can see that he runs through the contest without taking the ball, and then he just sits outside until it comes back. And when he wheels around, he's only got eyes for the goal. The one thing that I did notice that you guys might, well, you might have, Macca, but Nikki, you might not have been at the game. You don't often see Matt's work up close because he's in tight, and they usually have a wide-angle shot during those passages of play.
Yeah.
But they showed a replay of that little move before he kicked the goal as a close-up. And he does this beautiful little hip shimmy. Macca, did you see that?
I did.
I reckon it was on Cochin, or it could have been Martin, but a beautiful little, and it showed great awareness in tight. And you can't teach that sort of stuff, can you?
No, like he looked like he could get away from you in a telephone box the way he was moving around.
Yeah, no, very good. Rory Laird had his usual 34, 16 and 18. I thought it was a good game from Laird. He chopped out a fair bit and seemed to be in the right place. 4 tackles, a couple of inside 50s, only the 6 contested posies, so he was very much that outlet player and the link player, but went at 94.1% again. Apparently his season disposal efficiency is up around the 90%, which is just ridiculous for the amount of disposals he gets.
If he's not already kind of inked into the All-Australian team.
Well, here's his value. He 8 rebound 50s. He's a distributor out of defence. He rarely makes a mistake. Occasionally he loses composure, but it's not often. But he's just a linchpin.
And they kept trying to hit him in the head too. I was like, why are you trying to pick on the garden gnome?
It was named Curvis, actually. He hit him in the throat probably twice, I think.
Now, is that the one that they're actually thinking that Nankervis might be in trouble with the match review panel for?
He could well be in trouble with that one because he'll
get a fine.
Well, he'll get a fine, and that's a minimum. And it depends what... I'd love to go in front of you, in front of the tribunal, then.
Well, I wouldn't bloody fine people for shit. I mean, he hit him slightly late. Yes, it was front on contact. Leedy got straight up. Play on. Come on, Macca, you played back in the day. Come on, mate, you got soft.
I want to know what happened to McKay when McKay got a whack in the face and was bleeding and had to go off. We never found out. Or we're going, why is McKay lying on the ground?
Hang on, that was Nankervis again, wasn't it?
No, I don't know. I think that was in a congestion. I'm not sure. Anyway,
I reckon there's definitely at least two possible incidents at Nankervis. I'm not saying he will be cited, but might be cited for.
Mate, come on. Seriously.
Get back to talk. I want to know what Source's numbers were.
Hang on, we're getting him. Sloaney. Did we talk about Sloaney? Not yet.
Beast.
Oh, what a ridiculous game again from Rory Sloane. 15 kicks, 18 handballs, 33 disposals. 8 marks, including another nice drifting over the front of the pack mark. 3 goals, 8 tackles, 13 contested posies, win at 75.8%, 2 contested marks, 4 clearances, 2 rebound, like another complete game.
Who is a better...
He is the best midfielder in the comp.
I was going to say, who's a better midfielder playing with every aspect of the game than Rory at the moment?
I think in terms of all-round ability, like doing it in close, doing it in the air, doing it on the ground, impacting the scoreboard, running defensively, there's no one even touches him at the moment.
I can't think of a player who's doing everything like he is at the moment.
No. And if he doesn't win the Charlie, I reckon he'll win the Players MVP by about 6,000 votes.
Yeah.
Seriously.
And the coaches award.
Yeah. Having said that, I thought Bog this week was Sam Jacobs. 26 disposals, 9 marks, kicked a goal, couple of tackles, 50 hitouts, 8 leading inside 50. No one's winning Game of Crows this week. Source Jacobs was the leading inside 50 getter this week with 8. What else? Went 80%.
How many clearances?
80% disposals. He had 3 clearances.
And he had a running bounce. You would have had the cheer when he did that.
I don't know whether
from the crowd was huge.
But, Nicky, that is using the word running loosely. He wasn't very fast at the time.
Well, he wasn't walking.
he was running for him. Those legs are big.
It was like a giraffe. Let's put it in perspective, though. Nankervis has been roundly praised as being the form ruckman of the competition. And according to Champion Data, Sam Jacobs' current rating amongst ruckmen is 18.
What a joke that is.
So, and here we are talking about Source Jacobs being probably the best player on the ground, arguably, but certainly in the conversation. You know, Nankervis had 14 touches. You know, he's not bad at ground level. Nankervis at 7 tackles. But really, his impact on the game... by comparison to Source, was negligible, really. And I just felt like Source had a powerful game.
Boomer, yeah. I think he got the 3 votes, I think.
Yeah,
I think we were actually quite... To me, it actually felt like the players knew about that he'd only been given that 18th ranking. And they were like, no, we know he's better than this. We'll show you. So they were feeding him the ball a lot through that midfield. And I do know that his nickname at the club is Tall Mid. because he can actually play like a bit of time. He's got that attitude. And he just showed that.
Well, his celebration after one of his goal, I think, and he put up a finger, and I just wonder whether that was maybe a reference. You might be onto something there, Nick. The other bloke I felt was in the conversation, even though he had defenders' numbers, was Jake Lever. I thought his game was outstanding. You know, we're relying on Talia to do the work on Revolt, but I think he was ably assisted by Lever's chopping out. 20 touches, 8 marks. What else did he have here? He went 10 contested possessions, went at 80% disposal, 3 contested marks, a couple of rebound 50s, 5-1
percent. Should have had more.
I just felt like it was a really strong game from Jake, and it's not only the numbers, it's his composure under pressure. How many times he steps players is just hilarious. And his ability to make the right decision when he's got the ball in hand. He's one of the most composed defenders for his age that I reckon is we've seen for a while.
He's very, very, very courageous. I mean, he'll go where Angel Theatre Trend. And we must sign that.
Yep.
I think there's not a chance he's going to go back.
Well, I think he was quoted somewhere saying that he was very happy at the Crows and he was just waiting for the CBA. So I don't think it's in doubt, Maker.
Yeah.
No,
the fact that he got his brother over.
Yeah, I did hear that. I did hear them say that, exactly what you just said.
Yeah. Now, one of the other players I felt was probably underappreciated during the commentary. I don't know how you saw it, Nikki, at the ground, but Richie Douglas, I thought, had a really good game.
He did.
25 touches, 14 kicks and 11 handballs. He had 5 tackles, 4 inside 50s, 18 contested possessions, which is where I noticed him. He seemed to be in and under quite a bit. And I felt like he had the job on Martin when Martin was playing up the ground on the ball.
Yeah.
He was
around that. We have a corner who kind of plays on them but kind of doesn't, is the way that I view it, in that they can turn and be offensive. They don't have to stay stuck on like a tag like Greenwood was doing with Selwood.
Yeah, I think they call them like run with these days.
Yeah, run with play.
Yeah.
He had 7 clearances as well, Dougie. So he was quite effective in his own right. He certainly wasn't nullifying.
As Vardy Magic said, his physicality.
Yes.
He stepped that up and that stepped everybody else up. Because you look at Miller, some of the things he did this game. He seems to like playing against Richmond.
Just on Douglas, though, he's had a very good year, I reckon.
Yeah, I feel like that. I feel like he's been played appropriately this year, Macca. I think he's been put in roles that really suit him. And as a consequence, we're seeing the best of him again, and I thought he was very good, particularly early when there was still some heat in the game. Of the rest, I thought Bradley's game again was pretty good, a little bit loose at times with his disposal and decision-making, but I felt like, you know, second game back in a pretty high-intensity encounter in the first half at least. You know, he had 25 posies, 5 tackles, 4 inside 50s. 14 contested possessions. His disposal efficiency needs to come up, still under 66%, but he also had 9 clearances and 3 rebound 50s, so he got amongst it.
He'll get better and better with every game, I reckon, because I actually noticed him running on strongly in the last quarter.
Yeah, he looks fitter than he was last year.
And lighter.
Yep. Well, interesting. Tex made mention in a pre-game that he'd lost a bit of weight too, and I just wonder whether a few of them have been on a bit of a lightening up campaign, because Tex certainly looks better for it as well. And speaking of Tex, let's talk about his numbers, which were pretty damn good as well. 11 kicks, 4 marks, 4 handballs, 7 marks, 5 goals, 2, 4 inside 50s as well, as he was pushing up the ground a bit. What else? 4 marks inside 50 as well. So I felt, particularly when the game needed to be won, Tex was very handy up forward.
Oh, they're a great game by Tex. And it's interesting that we're talking about other players being in the best 3 on the ground, and yet he's a guy that, with the stats at centre, half forward, he's got 5 goals too and helped set up other goals as well. I think really, if you look at it, he's got to be up pretty high, doesn't he?
Oh, he would have been in our best half a dozen, I would imagine.
He was a bit stuck with the way the ball was coming in a little bit. That he was trying his little body thing again, and it wasn't quite working.
I hate it when he does that, actually.
I know.
It's laziness where he just tries to keep someone under the ball and get it out the back. I like it when he attacks the contest.
But his presence on the ground when you're sitting there watching it live, he just commands that area.
He does. You're right, Nicky.
And for a player, like how young he is, his captaincy is, he's just growing every year. And I think you were talking about it last week, Phoenix. He seems to be back pre-knee.
Yeah, it looks that way, doesn't it? He certainly
just moves so well.
He's got more confidence. He's not going up one-handed like he was last year as often. And he seems to be more confident in planting and turning, and you know, he's not turning like Benny Rutten anymore. So, looking good for Tex. Who else have we got here? I thought Rat, once the game opened up and the ball came outside, I thought Rat really came into his own. So
he blended in nicely with their Guernseys too.
Trust you. Only kicks 5 handballs for 23. He had 8 marks, 4 tackles, 7 inside 50s. Only had the 4 contested posies, and that's an indicator of how we're using him. A disposal efficiency a little bit down on his standard, just under 70%. But I felt his game, as I said, as a distributor, once the game opened up and we were able to move the ball sideways a little bit, he really became vital in our transition work.
Yeah, and that ball, if it had bounced the right way, that was still probably one of the loudest cheers I've ever heard for a point.
Oh, I know the one you're talking about, yeah. You could actually see off the telly, it was never going to be a goal, though.
Wasn't it?
No, never. But having said that, he was almost non-existent in the first quarter, but his last 3 quarters, they were very, very good.
Yeah. And, you know, I guess it's a commentary on our team and the way our team play that we are very role specific, and when the game is being played in close and in tight as it was in that first quarter, you're not probably going to see as much of Rory Atkins. What I would like to have seen in that first quarter is us just come up into the contest a little bit. We seem to still be wanting to have our outriders waiting for the ball, and the ball just never came out because the ball was getting, you know, turned over in close. So, but you know, who am I? They've got their instructions. T. Lynch, I thought, also had another very good game. 13.
He ran really hard.
Yeah, that's the common theme for Lynchy. 9 marks, 3 goals. 2 was an excellent return as well. 5 inside 50s for Tom. 12 contested possessions too. Went at 77% efficiency. 4 contested marks, clearance, and 3 marks inside 50s. Just another really solid game from Tommy. And, you know, when you see him take the ball at the defensive 50 and then, you know, 1 or 2 plays later he's in the forward 50, you just get an idea of how hard he works.
Also, that take where he just ripped the ball out away from the Richmond player in one hand and in that same hand doesn't swap it back to the other one, just guides it onto the foot to kick back on.
Yeah,
that was ridiculous.
That was classy, I thought.
Yeah, yeah. Smithers had a good game, although he was quiet for parts. What I felt like he's just a real weapon, isn't he? He's 9 kicks, 13 handballs. Doesn't sound fantastic, but he took 8 marks, 3 tackles, 3 inside 50s. I haven't got that number. Unfortunately, I'm on footy wire, so I haven't got that number.
There was a low bullet pass he did, like past a number of Richmond players, and they all just stood there and just went,
yeah.
Where did that go?
Yeah. Well, even his goal was a low bullet as well.
Ripper. I told him to kick that. It was very nice when they listened to me.
Yeah. Well, you could see on the TV, like, as soon as the ball came out to him, you're sitting there going, how in the hell did they let Smithers free on the 50, for God's sake? Who else? I thought Brownie was pretty good down back as well. At times had the job on Martin, but generally had also Rioli, I reckon.
And Rioli if Martin was deep, we had Hardigan on him.
Yeah.
It was only if there was a transition over that Brownie was on him. He was mostly minding Rioli.
Yeah.
And that tackle in the dying sets.
That was funny.
Yeah, but the intensity that we're still doing something like that, even though we're farting around with it for a bit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I actually felt we were deciding to test something out. We've been practicing at training.
It actually looked a bit like that because it was 6 minutes to go when we started doing that, you know, icing the clock kind of play. And yeah. I felt like, at first I thought, I reckon we just buggered and, you know, had enough. But you're right, it did also look like a bit of a drill. And then they just got sick of it and turned it over.
But you know who else you haven't talked about down the back lines?
Jake Kelly.
Yeah.
Jake Kelly, yes.
Our best play of the day started with him in the back line.
Yeah, I thought he had a superb game.
And that was what he did, just allowed us to break.
Well, let's go to the numbers. 28 disposals, which is a career high for Jake. 10 marks, had a tackle, had an inside 50. 11 contested posies, at nearly 90% disposal efficiency, and had a couple of rebound 50s and half a dozen 1%ers. His best game by a street. And I don't mind saying, I don't mind admitting when I'm wrong, and I didn't think Jake had it in him. But I actually think that Kelly has really benefited from having Lever in the team, not only to share the load, but he's also actually starting to play a bit like Lever.
Yeah,
they look alike as well. It's really disturbing at the ground. Going, well done, like you think it was well done, Lever. Oh, hang on, no, that one was Kelly.
But a good role model to copy yourself. But I thought I feel really pleased for the kid because 2 years ago, I think I can't remember how many games he played, about 8, 9, or 10, something like that. And he got injured and then he never regained his place. And then last year, he didn't have a good run. I think he had some injuries again last year. And this year he's been given an opportunity. And you really could not take that spot away from him the way he's playing. I mean, he came straight back in after being out for that week and deservedly so. And I think at the moment, blokes like Cheney must be thinking, how the hell am I going to get in there?
Yeah. Well, for me, it's what I've seen from him ever since he started playing in the NFL is this kid gives 100%. And he's been one of my favourites because of that.
Yep.
Because his intent is just, he is going to compete no matter what. He doesn't drop his head.
And I'll tell you what, he was knackered at the end of the game because he had been, as you said, he gives 100% every time the ball's near him.
Yep. And he got belted a couple of times and he just keeps going for it. He plays very much like his old man in that regard, and he could do a lot worse than to emulate his old man because his old man was a hard unit. I don't know, he seems to be playing with more confidence. He seems to be playing, backing himself a little bit more, and it's starting to have positive results and just another piece of flexibility in our team. You know, we haven't talked about the swingman yet, Andy Otten, with
Sellies.
14 posies, 6 marks, you know, a goal, 11 hitouts as well. You know,
we used Jenkins once in the ruck at a centre bounce, and as soon as we did that, he then dropped back, and Otten then rucked around the ground, and that was the only time Jenkins went into the ruck. And it's handy to have Otten there, that we can do that.
Oh, it's an unexpected bonus, and I'm sure the coaching staff feel the same, to have Otten, who was surely only included because of injury at the beginning of the season, to have him now as an integral part of our team would just be a bonus that the coaching staff wouldn't have been expecting, I wouldn't have thought.
So what happens when a young, what's his name, the lad?
McGovern.
Well, there's two of them, McGovern and Riley Knight.
Well, to me, it's a no-brainer for Knight. He comes in for McKay.
Yeah.
I think that's what would happen, yeah.
Yeah. I would say he'd come in for Miller, but I get the impression that the club just wants to keep playing Miller.
Yeah, get games into him.
I'm happy.
Because he can do things like that little spin move to keep the goal.
Yeah, and it was a beautiful little blind turn that the commentators basically ignored because they were too busy talking about Richmond at the time. I am happy to sacrifice D-Mac's 21 posies. And look, D-Mac has been putting in this season. He doesn't shirk the hard ball. We just don't get enough value from his disposals. Yeah, I think we get far more value from Riley Knight's 21 than we do from D-Mac's 21.
Knight only plays in two positions, though. He plays in midfield and he plays up forward. Whereas McKay, he's also one of our swingmen, like Odden. We can put him in a number of different roles, and the coaches, I think, really value that because they know they're going to get a good, solid job from him. So I don't think it's as clear cut as you're saying that McKay goes out for Knight. But yeah, I agree, though, that he's probably the more likely one, but it'll have to come down to our team balance and who we're playing.
Yeah, for my liking, though, I really love the way Riley Knight plays.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, and you've got Gov as well to come into this team. And surely he takes a forward spot, which is going to then put Miller's position under some sort of pressure. And I think Riley Knight is a bit more versatile than maybe you're giving him credit for, Nick. I reckon he could probably come off a half-back flank as well if needs be.
I think he could.
But I don't think we want to sacrifice him off of a half-back flank.
We wouldn't. We'd prefer not because he's a runner.
Well, we're happy to sacrifice Brodie Smith off a halfback. Come on, that's a running position these days, and having Smith and Riley Knight running off halfback wouldn't be a bad thing, I reckon.
And we got Brownie on one side though, and what happens is really it's Laird and Smith. They sort of rotate between mining a player and being the free man.
Yeah, they often you will see that one of them, and they were doing that this game, that one would be, and often it was Lady telling Smith, no, you're standing on him now, I'm not standing on him.
I just want to make it.
And Smith is like, you're closer.
I just want to make a quick acknowledgement to the amount of people that have joined us on chat tonight. It's really good to see so many different people and a couple of new faces on chat tonight, so keep hammering us with comments, and if any of them make any sense, probably not Damp Squibb's comments, but some of the others we might acknowledge. I want to talk a little bit about Miller just before we finish up on the individuals. A lot of people saying it was one of his better games for the season so far, which isn't in itself terribly difficult. How did you guys see his game?
He got a pass, but that's about it.
I liked his intent. He was covering ground a lot better defensively, which you could see being at the ground. There were a couple of times he positioned probably not quite right and they would get a little free kick out of it because he was like minding a space. So he needed to mind the corridor a little bit more, but he was still holding them up. Or a couple of times they was trying to take that ball on and actually bust through the pack. So it was nice to see. I liked that because he's not just trying to be outside. There was a little bit more inside.
Yeah,
that he seemed to be doing this game.
A couple of knocks on him from mine. He seems to be a little bit slow in the message going from his brain to his hands and feet. When he's got the ball, sometimes he can look a little bit like a rabbit in a headlights when he's going through traffic, or when he gets the ball in traffic. And also, I'm not convinced that he's got enough. How can I put this properly? I don't really know what I'm saying, so maybe I just won't say it. But I just think at times he's a little bit slow with ball in hand, going through congestion. So, whilst I think it was a better game from Miller this week, I don't know whether he's the right option when you've got. I keep banging on about Greenwood. I really think Greenwood needs to be given an opportunity sometime soon. But at the very least, we've got Riley Knight, who definitely deserves a spot in the ones. And obviously McGovern coming back at some point as well. So I tell you what, selection is going to be interesting over the next month. There's a couple of players. We've got blokes like Seedsman to come back as well. I don't know whether... I don't think Seedsman's best 22 as it currently stands. Versatility.
No, I don't know where you're playing Seedsman at the moment. There's nobody spot that he takes at the moment, in here, put it that way.
No. Well, he would have been a candidate probably for Kelly's spot at one point, but he doesn't take that spot at the moment.
Not in the form that Kelly's in, no.
No. So final thoughts before we wrap this one up and have a quick chat about the SANFL?
Well, my personal thoughts were that it was three man for man, and this is before the game, and I looked, and went through and looked at their list and saw some of the players that they're playing, and we're talking about some of the young lads like Markov and Castagna and folks like that. Vlosten, who's been around for a while, he goes all right, but not
magnificent. He just kept trying to hit everybody.
Yeah, Steve Morris.
He was trying to fight Hardigan.
Yeah, Stephen Morris, well, he's hard as nails but doesn't get the ball a lot. Butler's young. McIntosh is okay. But in other words, they had a lot of okay players but not really top players. And I think their 5-0 was a little bit false in the sense that they'd played basically overall lower-grade sides. We played some lower-grade sides, but we also played some top-grade sides. And I felt that we'd win, and I think I said 6 to 7 goals. Phoenix, he said 10-plus, I think, and yep. Full credit to you for that. But that's always just a confidence factor. But on paper, we were better to prove that way. And I really think that we have established that we are a genuine premiership chance, and that we've gotten the rivals, and I'm not saying whether we're better or whether we're worse, the rivals are the Bulldogs, GWS, and Port could be. So that's where I see us sitting at the moment. I think we proved that, in resoundingly today, that that's where we are.
And for me, it's what it says about Richmond. Last year, I know I made the point after my father pointed out to me that Hardwick is a really good coach when he's countering another team. And he countered us in that first quarter. They had a setup. We changed it up. And by halftime, it was obvious that their setup wasn't going to work anymore. We'd worked them out. There was no way that they could stop us scoring. And we were stopping them scoring in return. And yet they came out after three-quarter time and even into the last quarter, they still had exactly that one same game plan. Until Hardwick and the rest of his coaching staff can actually come up and not be a Sando and only having a plan A, they're not going to go anywhere.
And but personnel as well. And, you know, I think, you know, they should probably get a truckload of chicken shit dumped on them again this week like they did many years ago. I thought they showed nothing after quarter time.
I got to say, though, that we're blessed a bit by having a bloke as astute as Don Pike, because there aren't many teams in the AFL running around at the moment that can change tactics, game plans during a match. And it's not just the coaching staff, but it's the players as well, and it's the communication and, the message getting through and the players being able to execute. And I think that comment was even made by Rashido on the commentary, and he made a point of saying it, which means that, you know, it's just not something that we're fantasizing about as spectators. It's actually something that's happening. And, you know, when was the last time you followed an Adelaide Crows team that were down at quarter time and you felt almost comfortable that we would come out and address the issues after quarter time? We haven't lost a second quarter this season, and you know, in many, many times we've gone into quarter time down. So it just shows you how astute Pike is, and there's not many coaches in the competition at the moment that can pull that off.
No, I agree with you. And I think
also say Ogilvy needs a whole lot of credit to do with this as well, because he's picked players who are teachable.
He should be knighted, I think. He's done a great job for us.
Yeah, but it was evident.
Because you've got to have the cattle to do that.
Well, it was evident today, and it wasn't as if it was wholesale changes or anything like that, but we did change our look a little bit. We certainly addressed our intensity and our contested ball numbers at quarter time. You know, they've got to be able to pinpoint where the areas are that need working on or improving or line-up changes or what have you. And the players have got to be able to take that on board and be able to address it. And the fact that we've been asked questions so far in first quarters this season, and without exception, we've been able to address them in the second quarter, It's a real credit. And yes, Hardwick should have a plan B up his sleeve, but you've got to have the cattle to do it, and you've got to be smart enough. And I don't know, do you reckon Hardwick or Richmond fit either of those criteria? No disrespect intended.
No, I don't think so.
You talk up that midfield of Cochin and Martin and Prestia. And Prestia, I was so impressed with Prestia when he was up at Gold Coast. Yeah. He's not the same player at Richmond.
No, he's burning the ball. He's not getting enough of the ball. And I was a real G for Prestia as well. Nick, I wanted us to get him.
God, yes.
But he hasn't shown, he hasn't really fired a shot for Richmond so far. Martin didn't look
he as gave up a few time in chases as well,
yes,
today.
Yes. Cochin, I think, was the best of that lot. I felt he tried hard for four quarters. The other thing I'll say about Richmond is that they are absolutely cheating when it comes to Alex Rance. And I think Alex Rance is he's not as good as everyone thinks he is, because when was the last time you saw him man up on the best forward in the opponent's team? He was playing loose. He was playing Jake Lever's role tonight.
Okay, I agree with you. At the start, they had him on Otten. He was manned up on Otten, and then Otten was getting away from him, and they moved him off of Otten really quickly.
He got outmarked by Otten and not in Gold, and then they moved him.
Then he got outmarked by Cameron.
Yeah, but my thing is it's, you know, he's always been put up against Talia as being a more attacking, more, you know, got more disposals, creates more play than Talia, and that's why he's a better defender. Well, fuck me dead. If he's going to play in that kind of role, a lever role, a quarterback role, of course he's going to have more attacking stats, because he's actually playing a different role to Talia. Talia is a lockdown defender who will nullify the best key position forward line in the opposition team week after week. I don't think I can remember the last time Rance did a job on anyone, and he certainly didn't do a job on anyone tonight.
And the Victorian press love him and say that he is the best defender in the AFL. I say absolute bullshit to that, because what they do, they ignore the number of goals he gets kicked on him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He actually runs around with grass. No responsibility.
Yeah, exactly. You know, he does these dashes, and now and then he'll take a big mark and a run after that. But, you know, I reckon if you added up all the goals he gets kicked on him for the year, you'd be surprised.
Yeah. Anyway.
Well, that's why they don't play him on Tex anymore, because Tex used to rip him to pieces. Then they started putting him on Eddie, and that didn't work.
Yeah.
This time they tried him on Otten, and then they made him loose.
Yeah, so final word, disappointing, speaking about Eddie, that he didn't get his 500, because he's going to have to get it next week down in that shithole.
Oh, they kept trying to get it to him, but Richmond were triple-teaming him. Oh, they didn't want him to get it.
He took a mark on 50 and D-Mac was running through, and D-Mac had to do was shepherd the guy in the mark, and Eddie could have had a running shot from 50. And I don't think McKay understood the situation at all, and Eddie ended up having to pass it off, but to Hampton, I think. But I mean, who's the guy they put on Eddie? I think it was Morris, isn't it? They put on
Eddie. Yeah, Stephen Morris. Yeah, and he's a tough guy.
Yeah, and he's traditionally done a decent job on Eddie in the past. So never mind. Eddie will have to light up the where are we playing, Belle Reeve or Launceston or somewhere
next week. Launceston, I think.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's it for the Crows match. An excellent win. We're top of the table. We're travelling really well. The lid is on until we beat Geelong at Cadinia Park. That's my call anyway.
No, fair enough. For me, the lid is off, but I'll pop it again, on again before we have round 11. And if we beat them down there, then it'll come right off.
Yeah, then we're going to have a bit of a crack. Quickly, the SANFL, it was the SANFL showdown this week, and after a pretty good showing for half a game of footy, we fell away, and Port ended up winning by 35 points. Did you go down, Nick?
No, but I did watch it on TV, because at least it was on there.
Yep.
And, we had Deer go off with the concussion in the second quarter, but I quite liked what we were doing in that first quarter. We were actually spreading really nicely, our tools really well, to actually create some space. And he was playing the much higher, he was kind of playing more the Lynch role. from what I could gather.
But they had, I was going to say, Nikki, they had 20 AFL players in their side.
Yeah, and we had 14.
Yeah, and that's what wore us down in the end.
I'll just say Himmelberg is not only an athlete, he's actually he's a clever footballer. Gallucci played quite well as well. He didn't go in as hard as I've seen him in the earlier games, but I wonder whether that was just a little layover from the knock to the shin. Signorello needs to learn to either get a left foot or get rid of the ball quickly.
Yeah, he's got no left foot at all, has he?
No. Oh. And he got caught a number of times because he just kept trying to do too much. But we had free players he could have given it to.
I know he was very much an Ogilvy favourite pick out of left field because he wasn't even playing TAC Cup, was he?
No, but he likes the...
Oh, he was playing combination of TAC Cup and school footy, and he was at a school which actually stipulated you had to play more school footy.
Yeah.
But he liked his speed.
Yeah, I'm struggling to see it at the moment. I reckon he's a long way off. And yes, he was a late-ish pick, so you don't have high expectations, but he's got a fair amount of work to do.
I thought Ben Jarman had some really nice movement.
Very clean.
He was doing. Yeah, really clean. And he was running hard as well, so he's got a good tank on him.
Yeah. He might be right by the time Eddie retires, I reckon.
Yeah. He's a nice little... And he's got quite a good leap on him.
Yeah. He's our next forward pocket gun.
I thought
Beach and Greenwood played pretty well again.
They did. They managed to stop Beach for a little while.
Yeah. Well, he's really... He's become a bit of a... I mean, he's our best and fairest in the SANFL last year. There's no doubting he's a quality player, and it's such a pity for him that he's been drafted to a team that has such a powerful forward line in the ones, because I'm sure if he got given a few games in the ones, he'd do quite well. There's just not a spot for him at the moment.
Here's a nice little tidbit from PJ Crows. So Paul Thomas's wife gave birth on Saturday, and so Cheney actually stepped in and was defence coach for the day.
Oh, I wondered whether he was going to implicate Cheney in the part of that information.
I know. I was like, where's this going? Oh, okay. No, that's all right. And to be fair to our defence, they are top-up players, amateurs. We've got a couple of nice guys there that have come from the TAC Cup, but the ball was coming in too fast for them to really do too much. When we were able to hold it up and they could use a bit of the nous that they do have, they're not too bad.
Yeah.
But they're not an SANFL standard defence.
No. Well, it's all right if you got one or two, but if you got, three or four, talent starts to get a bit thinner on the ground. And, we need a couple of our AFL-listed players back in defence to really make a thing. But, to keep up with Port for a half, I thought that was a pretty decent sort of a hit out for our lads, more than what we could have probably expected.
And I take my hat off to Greenwood. He's very, very consistent. He's just racking up good numbers every week.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and the fact that they kept at it as well in that last quarter, they still kept going and they still kept trying.
Yep.
And that's all you can ask, really.
Yep. A few people talking about Dean Gore on the chat. It does appear that he topped out his ceiling pretty quickly and it sits at SANFL level. By the looks of it, I don't see him making the transition to inside midfielder at AFL level.
Well, I've got to say, the best way I can put it is the fact is that when we did the Dangerfield trade, he is genuinely steak knives.
And, no disrespect to Dean, but it's definitely that.
He just is what he is.
Yeah, that's right. Look, we've gone over the hour again, as we always tend to do.
We did have a nice game to talk about.
We did have a very nice game to talk about, and it's very nice to be sitting six and zip. Obviously, the lid is still well and truly on, as we spoke about earlier, but who have we got next week? North Melbourne.
North Melbourne down in Tasmania.
Yes, yeah. I hope the weather's okay.
Whoops. Yeah, it probably won't be. don't forget.
I've just seen on the replay regarding the Selwood-Greenwood thing, what got Selwood so upset was there was a contest. Selwood was standing off the contest about a metre or so, and Greenwood just came and pushed him over.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean you go and winch the umpires, you know?
He did.
Yeah, you just don't
do that. Oh, Cockadoo Collins came in to, you know, defend him. That didn't work out well.
Yeah. Anyway.
No, he didn't. Not Cockatoo Collins.
No, Cockatoo. Nakai Cockatoo.
Just Cockatoo.
Yeah, just Cockatoo.
I got him confused with the one that
can actually play.
Yeah, I reckon a commentator actually made that mistake sometimes. Anyway, that's it from us. Don't forget we've got Tuesday Night Live on Tuesday night at 8:30. I'm not sure whether Peter will be back, but he might be. If not, someone will be on.
We do really well without him.
Shh.
The team, not us. We do crap without him.
In our beautiful, unstructured way.
Yeah. Don't forget, you can follow us on Twitter or like us on Facebook, AFL Crowcast. And we will see you on Tuesday night for Tuesday Night Live. Thanks, guys, for joining us. Thanks on the chat. It's been excellent tonight. And enjoy your Sunday night, and we'll see you Tuesday.
Yep, good night all.
I'm off to watch the replay.